This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
And as I said last week, this week we'll start with Shaar Gimel and the Nefesh HaChaim, the first parak in Shaar Gimel. We have a very fascinating idea in Shaar Gimel, quite a troubling idea. Might not be able to sleep tonight. Perek Aleph. What does it mean when we talk about Hashem as makom, as the place? Lachen ba'ovus omrin, and Pirkei Ovus as well. Ushaton bispalel atas tefilas ba'keva, elarachamim b'tachanunin lifnei hamakom baruch hu. It says in Pirkei Ovus, don't make your davening a routine, but make it full of rachamim and tachanun requests before hamakom. Romzu zal b'tevat makom linyan godol. In the Hashem, referring to Hashem by the word makom, Chazal are telling us some very deep ideas. And this needs some deep understanding to understand their intention. And to explain the psukim that talk about this. So we're going to be dealing with the idea of God as makom, as place, as space. It just seems wrong that would be how to define God. Wouldn't you think that's the last thing you would call God? Makom is place. That's physical. That's material. That's dimensions. That's defined. Why would we call God Makom? And as a way of introduction, he says, the words of Chazal are like coals of fire. Now this is important because in today's popularist mode, where all these things have become popular, New Age mysticism is popular, and Kabbalah is popular. Even Torah has become quite cool. Everybody's learning it, and everybody's talking it, and everybody's teaching it, and everybody's saying, everybody's got something to say about Torah. And there's a word of warning here. Shekemoy hagacheles, just as a coal, she'afshelo niro bo rak nitzitzesh. If you look at a coal, you might just see the fading burning of a flame. In tosim krechachobo, if you apply your attention to that coal, lahofcho, to turn it, to lenapcho, and to blow that coal, kol shitenapcho yoseh, as you blow it more and more, tislahev, the flame will arise, v'tispashet bo hanitzotz, and the spark will spread, ad shiteaseh kula lecheshes, until you've got a raging fire. You can turn a softly burning ember into a raging fire. The tuchale hanos mimeno, you can have pleasure from it. The ishtamish loiro lischamim neglo, you can use its light and you can warm up by its fire. Avorak negdo v'loilo otzo, but you can just sit by it, you can't touch it. Shekevan shenases lacheshes, once you've brought it into this raging fire, tzoris zehiru shelitikovev, or now you've got to be careful that you don't get burned. Kein b'dimyon zeh nimshlu kol divrei chachomim, and that's how you're going to see the words of chachomim. She'af shenirim dvorim k'tzorim v'shutim. When you see the words of Chazal, they seem brief and simple. Aval hem kefatish yefotzu, but they can shatter into a million different pieces like when you hit them with a hammer. She'kol she'hodom mahapech u'misalsel u'medakdek bohem, for the more a person toils in them and plays with them and analyzes them, ye oru einov mishal heves oidom hagodol, one's eyes become enlightened with the power of the light of this fire, sheyimtso b'teichom inyonim amukim, because you'll find deep things in them, kamam ramzo, hafoich bo, dechulibo, as we're told, work on it, because everything's in it. So here's the first side of the equation. When you're working with a Chazal, you need a lot of time to reflect on it. This kind of skimming over things, and you quote one, and then you quote another one, and then a third one, and in 5 minutes you've quoted 10 of them. There's nothing there. You don't get to the flame. You take each phrase of the Torah, every phrase of Chazal, is like a coal with just a little bit of a fire on it. So yes, you can say there's a coal and there's another one and there's another one. But that's not how to get the most out of a burning coal. You've got to tender it. You've got to take care of it. You've got to work on it. You've got to glow it. Give of yourself into it. Invest in it. And then it starts becoming a fire. You need time for that. There's process. There's a lot of process in understanding a chazal, understanding a word of chazal. One has to dwell on it for a long time. And it's true, you can read an English translation or an art scroll or whatever of a chazal and say, well, I understand it. This is what chazal says. This is what it means. And this is this one's commentary on it. And this is that one's commentary on it. And now there are all these digests. There's a million commentaries on every word of chazal. And what have you got out of it at the end? You've got what everybody else says. But what do you say about it? You've got nothing to say about it. All you've done is collected a whole lot of information. That's not the process of learning. The process of learning is you want to be warmed by the fire. And you're not going to be warmed by somebody else's fire. You're going to be warmed by your own fire. And you've got to build your own fire. And you've got to take care of your own fire. And that's process. That takes a long time. But here's the other side of the equation. You have to be very careful with these coals. Not to start analyzing beyond the point that you're permitted to analyze. That's very odd. So there's a barrier in Torah. You can understand to a point and then you would have stopped thinking. It says, and you should warm yourself by the fire of Chachonim. Don't distance yourself so that you don't get the warmth. Engage, blow, toil with them, play with the coal so that you get the fire going. Because you won't get any pleasure from them if you don't get intimate with it. But on the other hand, you shouldn't get too close. Because you can get burnt. You've got to be able to keep a certain distance from it. There's a danger warning. With every chazal come two danger warnings. Don't gloss and don't overanalyze. So what do you do? How do you learn? We tend to do both. We gloss and we overanalyze. The only thing we don't do is really get it right. When we talk about Hashem as Makom, this is a good example. Hagam Shipshutan Ruvan, and we understand the Pshat, it's simple. Avakashin didactic, when Imsa Shiklola, Veronzu Beze, Oid Inyan Godo, we'll see and learn much bigger things. Ki Inyan Mashuiz Borach Nikra Makom, so he begins to analyze. The purpose for which he's called Makom, Peshu Chazal Bevracious Rabba, the Bracious Rabba says, by Yifka Ba Makom, when Yaakov hit the place, it says Bamokom. Yaakov came to Beitel and calls it Bamokom. Avuna b'shem Rabbi Lozman b'pnei ma'am mechanin shmoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'koyin ois Amokom. So Chazal are learning, the Medrash is learning, Vayifka Bamokom means not that he hit the place, means that he hit Hashem. He struck Hashem, Vayifka Bamokom. He came to the Mokom, to Hashem. Why do we call him Hamokom? Shehu mekomo shel Olam v'ein Olam mekomo. Because he is the place of the world is not his place. That's what the Medrash says. So now we could carry on and read the next Medrash, or the next piece of Rashi, or we could see what the art scroll tells us that various different people have said about it, or you can sit and think about that Chazal thought about it for over 40 years. And I'm beginning to understand this. Just beginning to understand this, and this piece of Nefesh HaChaim is helping. There's another Medrash. Atri tefeil oli ve'en ani tofeil asri. My place is subordinate to me, and I'm not subordinate to my place. If we shoot a return on what does a simple meaning mean? A place contains an object. So Hashem is the place that contains the universe. The universe is contained in Hashem. Don't look for Hashem somewhere in the universe. The universe is contained in Hashem. And if it would remove itself, Hashem would remove himself from the universe, the rest of the world, the universe would cease to exist, as it says, you're the place that gives chayes, that gives meaning to it all. And that's a foundation stone of Jewish belief. And that's why the Zohar calls Hashem Nishmaso Dechol Nishmosim, the Neshama of all Neshamas. So he's looking as place as the sustaining force, the protector, the container of everything. And then he goes on in the second page to say, "Omnam pnimius inyan mekoma shel olam u'inyan gadol moed." But if we get deeper into the pnimius, let's get into the inner meaning of this idea. That goes even further. Ki mashi kinu yisbarashmo mekoma shel olam ein arach klal inyan mokam hanoisek kol chepetz ha'imed alav. It can't be compared to a place that carries something you put on it. And that's not what it's talking about. That you take this, the watch, and you put it on the table, and you say the table is the makom, and the watch is on the makom. That's not what it is with Hashem. She atzmus is havus the kiyum akli yesh lamatzius bifnei atzma. Because if I put this watch on the table, the watch still has an existence independently of the table. There is a relationship between the watch and the table, but they both exist independently. Makom rak matzelis so shelo tipol v'tishove. The table just keeps it from falling. It serves it. And the relationship of the body to the neshama is the same. Our body has its own existence without the neshama. And even when the neshama leaves the body doesn't cease to exist. It's still there. It's different, but it's there. It has a metzius. Aval ha'olamos kulam kol ikar hishavus metziusum kol rega hu rak miito yizbarashu. But with Hashem, their very existence is from Hashem. Ve'ilu haya mesalek ritzono yizbarach milahavos yizum kol rega hayu la'ayin ve'efes manash. So now the Nefesh HaChaim gets onto kind of quantum physics stuff and says, and if Hashem withdrew his creative intent from the world for a second, the world would cease to exist. So there is an energy holding this thing together. And it's an energy that holds it together. Take that energy away, it disappears. And just because there is no power, even the most wisely intellectual can really understand this, to understand that in truth, all of the universe is nothing. Hard for people to understand. Interesting that now people are beginning to understand that. Now there's scientific theory that says that. And just on the very simple level, we've talked about that before, that if you condensed the world and took away all the empty space between all its particles, and we've said, how big would the world be? The size of a cricket ball. Is that the world or the universe? The universe would be the size of a cricket ball. And that's kind of not understandable, that could be if you actually compacted everything into that size. But the Nefesh HaChaim is saying more. He's saying, "Be'etzem Ayin, not even a cricket ball. But not even that." The scientists have got to the point of understanding that the universe is really the size of you. Condensed all the matter and held it together would be the size of a cricket ball. So what's everything else in this huge universe? But Chazal say, no, it wouldn't even be a cricket ball. There would be nothing. If you condensed it, there would be nothing. That's not possible to understand. Hashem's energy keeps it all together. That's why we use the term mokom, because that most accurately explains the relationship. And I'm going to just read a little bit further, and then I'll explain it. Because even though Hashem decided to give the world a physical form, to the point where it's impossible for a person to understand that really the world is Hashem's energy. And to a human being, it looks as if the world is an independent existence. Heiru Chazal einei asechel, Chazal lighten our eyes. B'ham shilon d'inyan mokum shiv k'mush hakiyah amedus alei ze mokum agam shakiyah reyesh lo be'emes mitzius b'fnei atzma. Okay, Chazal say, you think the world has an independent existence like the watch on the table? Fine, so think of it that way because it's easier for you. Agam shakiyah reyesh lo be'emes mitzius b'fnei atzma. Im kol ze im lo yoa la kliyah mokum sh'tabed olov, hoysek lo hoyo. But if an object didn't have a place to be, it would be as if it wasn't. So even though the world is sensed by us, if Hashem weren't withdrew his intent, it wouldn't be anything, because Hashem is its place. Because if there wasn't place and space in Hashem's will to keep the universe, they would all disappear, the whole universe would disappear. You might remember as a child wondering, how do I know that the world exists? Do you remember asking that? Maybe it's just all my imagination. Maybe it's all just a dream. And maybe we're all just dreaming. Maybe there isn't anybody else. Maybe I'm the only one. And everybody else is just part of my dream. How would I know? And even if we can, maybe we've all just got the ability to elude ourselves to and create illusions. And we all see things. But who knows whether we're actually seeing the same colors and the same... I remember as a child getting very disturbed by the all those permutations of possibilities of the world not being real. So let's have a look at that and see it. And as I was learning through this Nefesh HaChayim, I thought of a very simple understanding of it. What would an object be if there wasn't any such thing as space? What would it be? If there was no such thing as space, what would this be? There's no height, no length, no width. There's no such thing as space.
It wouldn't be?
What would you say? Do you agree? If there was no such thing as space, it wouldn't be. Where would it be? It couldn't be. So if there was no such thing as space, it wouldn't be. Now think just philosophically a step further. If, without space, everything would be nothing, then everything is simply space. Is that true? Well, I couldn't find anything wrong with it. It doesn't feel right, but it's logical. If we say if without space, each thing would be nothing, then everything is space. Because there is nothing else. You say without space there's nothing, then that means that it is only space. Take the space away, and it is nothing. That's why we call the Ribbono Shel Olam Makom. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is the space in which the world can exist. The Ribbono Shel Olam, so to say, takes his intention away from the world, and his attention away from the world. There is no space. Space is a creation of Hashem. And it could emerge really that all that Hashem created was time and space. Because everything else is nothing. Was it Einstein who said, Moshe, that if there was no time, everything would happen at once? There would be, in an instant of eternity, all of history would happen. In one instant blast. Time allows things to happen separately, separate. Space does the same. So in a way, all Hashem created was time and space. And then everything else had a space to be. And that's why the Ribbono Shel Olam is Nitzchius. That's why he's forever. He's the ultimate of time. And he's the ultimate of space. Nitzchius is time to the infinity. And Mokum is the place that contains the universe. That's space to the infinity. So Hashem is infinite space and time. And that enables experience. Experience needs time. Time is to experience what space is to object. Would you agree with that? If there was no such thing as time, then what would an experience be? It would be nothing. Therefore, all experience is time. It's just the experience of time. And things are the experience of space. And yes, then there's texture added to it, and I can figure out what color and smell and all these things are. But those are really subjective things. Those are things we experience. But in terms of the objective world, all there is time and space. And so if we really get into reality, that's where reality is. That's where it all happens. And what is space? Space is a mathematical relationship between different coordinates. That's all space is. And what is time? It's a mathematical relationship. And what is movement? A movement is a relationship between space and time. So the whole world is mass. That's all it is. The whole of reality are some mathematical equations. It's all we are. Sorry? We're so bad at it because that's what it is. The whole, it comes out that the whole Bria is just a set of mathematical equations. It's all just ideas. And that could be why Hashem created the world. It's all made out of chokhmah. The Bria is made out of chokhmah. It's made out of mathematics. It's made out of equations. It's made out of relationships. That's what the whole Bria is.
I suppose that Hashem creating this entity of space and time is a paradox of existence. So then did he create, or did he, in terms of the Neshama, did he put a spiritual aspect in?
Okay, so now we're doing exactly what the Nefesh HaChaim warned us not to do. Okay, and I'm going to explain in the next piece, explains that why. Yeah, now what do we do with all this? So fine, very interesting idea. The world is just a set of equations. That's all that reality is. It's just a lot of mathematical relationships that create time and that create space, and the relationship between time and space, that's all just a matrix of mathematical relationships. That's what it is. We've proved it. Doesn't feel right, but it sounds right. That seems to be what it is. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is the Mokom. The Ribbono Shel Olam is that matrix of space and time, as we understand his relation to us. It's only his manifestation to the universe. The Ribbono Shel Olam himself, as we've been learning right through the Nefesh HaChaim, is something we can't begin to understand, describe, appreciate, and anything. But we can experience the Ribbono Shel Olam's interface with the world, and his interface with the world as creator is really the designer and maintainer of a matrix of mathematical relationships. That's what it is. So what are we meant to do with all this? The Nefesh HaChaim gives an amazing pshat in a piece from the Sefer HaYetzirah. Sefer HaYetzirah, there's a lot of dispute as to who wrote the Sefer HaYetzirah. Most say it was Avraham Avinu. That's how far back it goes. It's a very short Sefer. It's only a few pages long. It's written in poetic form. Some say it was later than that, time of the Nevi'im, time of early Tanaic times. But in our Masorah, the most likely source is Avraham Avinu. Sefer Yetzirah, the Book of Creation. And there's a piece there, and here the Nefesh HaChaim quotes it and gives an amazing pshat in it. Eser Sefiros Bilimo, the first perek of the Sefer Yetzirah, talks a lot about, you've heard about the Eser Sefiros, haven't you? Everybody knows about the Sefiros, even Madonna knows about the Sefiros. As if people understand, and everybody's talking about it, and they've got Goyim are writing about it, and it's books on the Sefiros, and it's all very simple. But what you very seldom hear people saying is what the Sefer Yetzirah calls them. And the first time the spheres are referred to in print is the Sefer Yetzirah. That's where they come from. Then they weren't invented by the Baal HaTanya. The Sefer Yetzirah is where it starts. And they're called the Eser Sefiros Belimo. What does Belimo mean? Nothingness. The Eser Sefiros are nothingness. 10 Sefiros, what are Sefiros? Countings, numbers, mathematics. The 10 formulas of Belimo, they're called. That's the foundation of creation, which the Sefer Yetzirah sets up. Moshe? Which one? The Sefiros. Yeah, maybe the 10, yeah, you could even say the 10 digits, the 10 basic digits of creation. And with that, you've got the whole of mathematics. And with that, based on what we've just said, you've got the whole of creation. You've got the whole of Metzius. It's all mathematics. But it's Belimo. There's nothing else. There's nothing else there. And whenever he refers about to the 10 spheres, he talks about spheres Belimo, the these spheres of nothingness. And then in his poetic form, he says in the next sentence, "Beloim picho miladaber." What does that mean? Beloim picho miladaber. It means like muzzle your mouth from speaking. Beloim, shut your mouth. Sorry.
To close up your mouth.
Put a hold on your mouth. Miladaber. So what is the Sefer Yetzirah teaching us here? Here's where the Sefer Yetzirah teaches the essential art of meditation. This is where it comes from. This is probably the oldest source, the oldest written source of meditation. Because Belom Picho Miladaber, what's the first thing when you meditate? Stop talking. Just silence. You're not going to understand it with mouthing. But that means more. Miladaber doesn't just mean to talk to one another aloud or to talk to yourself. Miladaber means to use vocabulary. If it's belimo, vocabulary doesn't work to get it. And that's why I said we're just about to do what he warns us not to do, to start analyzing. When you're analyzing, you're using vocabulary. If this is nothingness, how can you use vocabulary? Beloim picho miladaber, and the next phrase, velibcho milaharher, and stop your mind from analyzing. Here's the direction. You can read any primary book on meditation technique, and those are the first things I'll tell you. But you've got to get to the state where you're not analyzing, where you're not vocalizing, where you're not verbalizing, you're not articulating in your mind, because as long as you're doing that, you're looking at illusion. Because one thing I know for sure, if I look at this watch and I see a watch, I know I'm not seeing the real thing. If I use the word watch, I'm describing this. So I'm not talking about the real thing. So if I say, put the watch on my hand, I'm not talking about anything that's real. I'm just using words in the most superficial sense to create some kind of meaning so that we can know what we're talking about. But in terms of really getting to the essence of the neshama of what this is, and to feel it in mind, you can't do that with words. So we have to be able to do that in non-verbal ways. And the same applies and even more so with interpersonal relationships. So we've got to understand that when I look at myself in the mirror, that's not me. That's not me. That's the most superficial form. That's so not me. What's me is deep, deep, deep inside. And if I use words to describe me, I'm describing something that I'm not. So that's easy to understand. We kind of get it with ourselves, but I've got to know that about you too. The person I see is not you. So how am I going to know you? Belom picho miladaber, velibcho milaharer. Stop talking, stop analyzing, stop judging. Just feel the other person's presence. Just feel. Allow yourself to feel. That's the only way you're going to get to know the other person, is to be able to sit silently and feel. Because in Kabbalah, the lev is always the source of bino, and bino is the analytical force. And seichel is the force of chokhmah, which is the experiential force. So he specifically says the libcho, because that's the source of analysis. So that fits in well. And then he says, which is the next phrase you'll see in any meditation book, the imrots libcho, and if your mind starts rushing, what happens when you meditate? It doesn't take very long, and we say mind's wandering. But it doesn't wander, your mind doesn't wander. It rushes. It goes so fast from one thing to another. Wander kind of implies, you know, you move. But you try meditating, and in 2 minutes, figure out how many things you've thought of. Where your mind, that's not wandering, that's rushing. That's ruts. The imrats libcho, and if you find your mind is rushing, shuv lamokor, get back to the space. Now the Nefesh HaChaim learns this very differently from the way Rav Aryeh Kaplan learns this piece of Sefer HaYetzirah. He learns that shuv lamokor, get back to something tangible. If your mind is running, you kind of lost it, get back to something tangible. And in meditation technique, what is used? To get back to your breathing. Get back to something tangible, get back to a rhythm, find yourself, and then start again. That's the way that he learns Shuv Lamokum. But in the context of this perek of Nefesh HaChaim, how does the Nefesh HaChaim learn that? Imrat Libcho Shuv Lamokum, get back into the space. Imrat Libcho, if your mind is running, then where is it running? Where is it running to? It's running to definitions. It's running to words, to ideas, to things. Shuv Lamokum, get back to the space in between the things, because that's where you'll find reality. You'll experience these essence, sefirus of the limo, you'll experience Hashem, you'll experience your own neshama, you'll experience the mokum. All of that you'll experience in silence and stillness and calmness, where you're using your capacity to feel, not where you're using your analytical process. And that even when you're learning Gemara, you have to simultaneously be using your mind to understand the Gemara and simultaneously to be able to be doing that. Why? That's why our practices, our avodos, whether it's tefillah or Talmud Torah, whether it's davening or learning, are a million times more complex than meditation. Meditation is like crawling compared to acrobatics, which is what you have to be able to do when you're learning, in terms of your mind is working on one plane and your heart is on another, and you're still on the one hand and you're active on the other, and you're able to access something deep while you're busy analyzing ideas on the surface, and to be able to be doing all of that together. That's the avodah of learning. That's what learning Torah is. Learning Torah is not just reading. That's what learning Torah is. And that's why Torah can form a person. That's why Torah can change who a person is. Torah doesn't leave you unaffected. On Shabbos I was looking at a piece of Rav Kook where he explains that what is Torah? Where does Torah come from? So Torah is Hashem's Chochma. What is Hashem's Chochma? We've just said Hashem's Chochma is that very creative energy that is reality. So when you connect with Torah, what are you connecting with? You're connecting with that very force of creation, which recreates you. You're not the same afterwards. You're the same flesh and blood, but we've just said the object that is you is not you. You are your energies. And so the moment you're connecting into the energies of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're not the same anymore after that. And that's why Torah can transform you. Torah changes who you are. But you've got to open yourself that you've got to be learning, not just reading, and not just analyzing with your brain, but actually immersing yourself, as he was talking about the coals, how to work with the coals of Torah, and to understand that you've got to give yourself time to really go deep into one idea of Torah. And it's not a matter of just skimming, but of taking one idea of Torah and really, really going deep. Omar la mokum daikus, it says the Nefesh HaChaim, it says specifically, go back to the mokum. And just before that, the Sefer Yetzirah says, Shilakach Ne'ema, that's why it says about the angels, Rotsoi Voshov. They run and they return, because that's the process. And you find that in meditation technique as well. This is the next paragraph you'll get to in the meditation book. Oh, the Sefer Yetzirah is, what do you do when your mind does wander? They say wander and we say rush. What happens when your mind rushes? Come back. And what will happen then? They tell you, it will wander again and you'll bring it back again. That's the process. Rotsoi v'shov. It's backwards and forwards. You can't keep it focused all the time. It's the same in davening. Don't get upset if while you're davening your mind rushes. Stop saying wonders. Don't be afraid if your mind rushes off the page, off the words of the davening. That's the process. Backwards and forwards. Rots over shows. Bringing it back. Keep it. Bringing it back is the process. Letting it wander. Bringing it back. Letting it wander. Bringing it back. That's the breathing process. That's the rhythm. That's what it's about. It's not about just getting to somewhere and staying there. Only machines can do that. Human beings are rots over shows. We move in movement all the time. And it's the quality of that movement. And each time you come back deeper. You drift out, and you come back deeper. And you drift out. What do you do if your car's in the mud? What do you do? Just sit there and go faster and faster and faster and spin your wheels. Out and roll in, and you try out again. And you roll back in. And each time you use the momentum of the roll to get a little further out of the mud. That's how it is. Your mind drifts, so you use the momentum to bring yourself back. And the force of coming back takes you a little deeper. Then you go out again, and the force of coming back takes you a level deeper. That's the nature of concentration. Concentration isn't to be focused 100% all the time without your mind ever moving off. Not in this area of bilima, of being able to access that which is not physical. Omar la mokum daikat says, come back to the space. Heinu she'om yoritz machsheves leiv ha'odom ha'muskel Ech nimshach yishavuson kol rega mimenu yisbarach shuv la'mokum La'asig erich ha'muskel b'dimyun ha'murgosh b'chinas ha'mokum. Use, learn how to acquire understanding using imagination and sensation. This could be a New Age meditation, but could it not? You learn how to get deep knowledge, klasik erech hamuskal, to get the value of the concept, not using analysis of the mind, but dimyun hamurgosh bichinas mokre. Get yourself into the space where you can feel, and you're in mokum, you're in space. Because it's in space where you'll find the reality, it's in space where you'll find the truth, not in the building bricks in between. That's this amazing piece of Nefesh HaChaim, which we'll leave here.